Okay, so we are holding on to this test for an hour. Quarter of the way down. Almost landed in Floyd. Yeah, okay.
We talked about yesterday, Mara talked about the various grosses on the first possible
Ashrei, Shishela, Halachbat, Sasser, Shoyim, etc. It refers to a person who doesn't go to the various goyish types of entertainment. It refers to Avraham Avinu. And in that connection, in one of the drashas, we said, well, okay, a person can figure, okay, I didn't go to any of their theaters or circuses or whatnot, so therefore I might as well just go and sleep. I have nothing better to do. So we say, no, there also has to be the vasei toiv, there also has to be the doing good. You have to have, uvistim the Torah of Hashem chetzo, as the pasuk continues, that the Torah of Hashem is his desire. So now we're going to talk about that a little bit. The pasuk says, kiim the Torah of Hashem chetzo, that in the Torah of Hashem is his desire. Rather, in the Torah of Hashem is his delight. Rather. So what does it mean that in the Torah of Hashem is his delight? Implying that it has to be his delight, because otherwise it would just be chefetz, kiim b'saras Hashem chefetz. So therefore, Omer Rebbe, so Rebbe says, it means ein adam loymed Torah, elam imachem shalibay chafetz. It means the person only learns Torah best in something that his heart desires.
Meaning, Rashi says, so if a person is learning from his Rebbe, he should learn a Masechta that he would like to learn. If the Rebbe teaches him some other Masechta, then he's still thinking, I would rather learn this other topic, and therefore he's not going to focus on it as well, and therefore he's not going to learn it as well. So a person should learn Torah, but Makam should be very focused in the area of Torah, which he prefers.
So in other words, are you saying he has to learn an additional Masechta by himself?
No, in other words, that like this, if a person is going to learn something that doesn't appeal to him, then it's not really going to, that doesn't really appeal to him, then he's not going to really pick up on it. But better, he should learn something, b'makom shelibei chafetz, he should learn something that appeals to him.
And that way it'll stick with him.
So you have to ask
the
teacher to learn
whatever he's got. Right. Well, we didn't mean. How would you know? No, but a person has an idea what kind of topic he has an affinity for.
But I mean, there is some discussion on this in particular. Actually, the Alter Rebbe mentions in Hilchos Talmud Torah that a person has to learn all the different areas of Torah in his lifetime. Pshat the Rebbe's Jerush and Soid. So what do you mean?
This is presumably talking about within the various genres of Torah, like Pshat versus Remez, etc. So one idea is, yes, a person has that responsibility, but that's just one answer that they give, is maybe that's talking about a person who doesn't feel any particular affinity to some area of Torah, so he has to do all the different areas, but if a person feels a certain affinity to one area, then let him focus on that. In fact, it's where it's brought from Kisrei HaRizal, but that might be because his neshama has a something in particular with that.
So it goes against what we were saying yesterday, that dafka we have to go in the areas that we don't like so much.
We're not saying that. So that's true. When it comes to mitzvahs, we have to go beyond what we want. What we're saying that a person learns Torah best from Mokum Shulib Chafetz. Eventually, what a person eventually also, you know, what a person needs to do is Aseir Tzoyne Kir Tzoyncha, right? He makes Hashem's will your will. So therefore, he's Chafetz to learn any part of Torah. But we're talking about
it has to be a desire. But in other words, the idea is. So eventually, you work on yourself so that your desire is to learn any part of Torah. In Chassidus, by the way, in a lot of places, it talks about the
idea behind it. We say in Chassidus that rotzer, that desire, is higher than seichel, and it has an effect on seichel. So therefore, when a person has a rotzer to learn a certain area of Torah, then it has an effect on his seichel and makes it that he'll learn that part more effectively. Okay. Shenema ki b'sardas Hashem chetzeh, as it says, in the Torah of Hashem is his delight. In other words, we're talking about something that he himself delights in. No, meaning he himself has a delight in this particular area of Torah. Okay. So here's an example.
Levi v'Rav Shimon v'Rebbe yachtu kamei d'Rebbe. One time Levi and Rav Shimon, the son of Rebbe, were one time sitting in front of Rebbe learning. B'kapaski sidra. And they were learning a section of Tanakh. They were learning a section of Tanakh, Solik Sifra. Eventually, they got to the end of one of the Sforim of Tanakh. Well, now the question is, what are we learning next? And as one of the Mephoshim points out, I don't remember who, that
just like we always say, whenever we make a Siyum Masechta, you don't just end there. You right away start a new Masechta right there on the spot. And the same way Simchat Torah, we don't just end with a bracha, we immediately begin over Bereishis. The same way here, they ended one thing. They have to start something new. So now the question becomes, what are we learning next? Levi Omer lights of one Mishle. So Levi suggested, let's bring say from Mishle and learn that next. Rav Shimon ben Rebbe Omer lights of one Tillim. And Rav Shimon ben Rebbe says, let's bring a Tillim. Kafye the Levi. So Rav Shimon overpowered Levi, Vaisu Tillim, and they brought a Sefer Tillim. Overpowered him in the sense. Kafye literally means he overpowered him, but in what sense? Not physically. So Marashah says, in other words, first of all, because in the Seder of Tanakh, Tillim comes before Mishle. In a regular printed Tanakh nowadays, they usually print Tillim, Mishle, and Eo first, and then the rest of Ksuvim. In the order that the Gemara gives in Baba Basra, you have Rus, then Tillim, then Eo, and then Mishle, and Tehelas, and so forth. Either way, the point is Tillim comes before Mishle, so that's one thing. Number two, Tillim is all about fear of Hashem, is all about Yiras Shemayim. Mishle is all about Chochma, all about wisdom. Yiro comes before Chochma.
Once it's in Tillim with a U instead of Tehelim.
It's a different way of saying it. It's not centers, it's just different ways. It's a way of pronouncing it, Tillim. I mean, there's an idea that's brought in different places. For example, Tillim literally means piles, like hills or whatever. So like the piles and piles of Yiras Shamayim, right? Yeah, that's Tillim in a text. That's the text, this is the top. But it means piles, so like there's piles and piles of Yiras Shamayim in there, as opposed to Mishle, which is very nice, but it's Divrei Chochma. Ki Motu Hocha, so they start reading, they start learning Tillim, and they get to the second pasuk, Ki Besoros Hashem Chesed. Parish Rebbe V'Amar, so Rebbe clarifies and explains what does the pasuk mean, as we just said, Ein Adam Lomid Torah Elam Makom Shalev Chochma, the person learns Torah best in the area that he's interested in. From a Levi, the Levi says, Rebbe, that's not the one of the Rosh Lamed. Well, then, you've given me permission to stand up and leave the Shir, because I'm not as interested in Tillim. I'm interested in Mishle. I'm the one who wanted to learn that. If you're saying a person learns best in Makom Shalei Bechafen, you're implying that I don't need to be here.
What's the answer?
There's no answer. So, okay. Maybe he did talk, and maybe he did talk to Levi. I don't know. Okay. Omer of Abdimi Bachoma. Another meaning of Kim Besaras Hashem Chet. So till now, we were just understanding that Chet Tzoy means the person who learns Torah, that his desire is in the Torah. Now we're going to understand a little differently. The person who is involved in Torah, Hashem does his desires, his needs for him. Kim Besaras Hashem. He's involved in learning Torah, therefore, so Hashem does, right, Oisek, and in particular, in many places, it talks about the idea that we use the expression Oisek, as in you have to make it like your business, like an Asek, right, it's not necessarily permanent, but more, well, there has to be what they call a clear bizman, a certain fixed time, and we're going to talk about it on the day. There also has to be, more importantly, a clear benefit, that it's important to you, that it's something, it's not just something, okay, when I get around to it, I'll do it. It has to be like an Asek. It has to be a business. This is my thing to do. And yes, I also have to go make a living. I also have to do whatever. But okay. So a person who does that, then
I should. Can you give a signature and learn this 2 hours a day or one?
Yes, that's what we're saying. In other words, it's a question of how much effort and how much desire a person is learning is putting into it. If a person is in the kind of situation where they have to work 15 hours a day and they only have an hour a day to learn or whatever, Okay. So Hashem does for him his desires, his needs. So in other words, therefore we read the pasuk, Kiim the Sarah of Hashem, if he's involved with the Torah of Hashem, Chesed, then it's Chafasim are to take place. So that's another. Chesed meaning his desires, his needs. Omar Rava, so Rava says, La'olam yumud adam Torah b'makam shali b'chafet, a person should always learn Torah in the place that his heart desires. Shenema kiim b'sarat Hashem chefte, the same thing. Now, what is Rava adding to what Rebbe said before? So there's a few different explanations. Marashah says that Rebbe was talking about the area of Torah that a person is interested in. Rava is talking about the physical location, the location where a person is learning also. If a person has a preferred location, that would be the best place for him to learn. Other mafoshim talk about other possibilities. It might have, for example, there's one that I think the Seder Yaakov is the name of the sefer. I think talks about you can have a person who really doesn't feel like learning this particular thing. So okay, let him learn something that appeals to him. Then you can have a person who, fine, he has an affinity. He has a certain area of learning that he's interested in, but there's something else that he knows he'll get more out of it. He knows it'll be better for him. It's something that he needs to know more practically, or it's something that whatever. So then the question is still, which one should he learn? And the answer is, even then, he should learn what's libre chofetz rather than the part that he's required, not necessarily the part that before we were talking about. In other words, a Rebbe shouldn't force a Talmud to learn something that he has no interest in, because he's not gonna get very far into it anyway. Here we're talking about even the person himself has one thing that I really like and something else that I don't like as much, but I know I could get more out of it. Fine, let him still stick with the one that he likes, at least for the time being, because he'll get more out of it. Okay, all right, onward. Okay, the Amar Rava, also Rava says, further on this process, the Tchila Mikras al Shmoy Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, originally when a person starts learning Torah, the Torah is called Hashem's Torah. All of a sudden, Nikras al Shmo. Later on, that Torah is called by the person's name. It becomes his thing. Shenema b'sodas Hashem chen. So, as the pasuk says, in the Torah of Hashem is his desire. So, at that point in the pasuk, it's called the Torah of Hashem. And then it continues, u'b'sodas soy, and in his Torah, meaning now that his doesn't refer to Hashem anymore, now it refers to his own, he delves into it day and night. So, we see that now, by learning it, he's made it his own. He's made it his own Torah. V'amar Rava, another thing we learn from this pasuk, la'olam yilmad adam Torah v'achakach yeg. A person should always first learn Torah from his Rebbe, just to learn it even like on a more superficial level, just so that he knows the wording, so he knows the basic meaning and the basic wording and meaning or whatever, and afterwards let him delve into it and try to figure out how we draw an analogy between one thing and another, and Tashis and Terutzim or whatever, the basic stuff of the Gemara. But first it's important to know the basic facts. Because Rashi says like this, first of all, If you start with Pilpul and Kashis and Terutzim or whatever, his Rebbe may not be available all the time. So like this, he won't end up knowing the basic facts. Also, like this, after a person has learned a lot of times when he has a question, he himself will be able to figure out the answer. As opposed to if he starts with all the Kashis and Terutzim and then Pilpulim and all, then he's going to have a much harder time with it. And in fact, by the way, there were. I mean, it's a known thing among the Jews in Poland, in particular, it was a big thing to get involved in Pilpul at a very young age. And many, many, many Gdolei Yisrael of that period, the Maharal is one of the great ones. There were many others talked very sharply about that, against that, based on our Gemara, based on other things. That you have to know, you have to have the basic facts in hand before you start getting into Pilpul.
So when did you get into Pilpul?
So eventually, after a person has learned the ideas. The Alter Rebbe also talks about the idea that we're talking about those different levels of learning. The Alter Rebbe talks about in Hilchos Talmud Torah. The kind of yeah that we're talking about over here, this medama milsa la milsa, whatever, this kind of thing of being able to draw analogies and discover new ideas in the Gemara and in the Halacha, whatever, that's a really advanced kind of thing. We're saying, in other words, a person first has to learn the basics, and in particular to learn halacha, and eventually you get into the siyagin. V'amar Rava, la'olam ligris inish, a person should always learn girsa, in other words, like learning on a fast, superficial level, kind of. V'afal gav de meshatach, even if he's forgetting it, let him still repeat it over and over, and eventually it'll sink in. V'afal gav de la yoda mai kamar, even if he doesn't understand what he's saying. So what it means, he doesn't understand. Okay, so Rashi says it means that his Rebbe, even we're talking about his Rebbe, doesn't really know how to explain it to him. So different Rishonim and Achronim talk about different nuances in it. It can mean the person understands the words, but he can translate it word by word or whatever, or phrase by phrase, but he's not really getting the underlying concept. That's the point, in other words. So when it comes to Torah Shabbat Peh, if a person learns Torah Shabbat Peh without understanding at all, he's not Yotzeh. However, that's the thing. When we're saying over here, we're saying either, for example, you understand it on some level, at least you understand it on the level of understanding the words, even if he can't grasp the concept yet, or it can mean
for example, that he, some of the Mepharshim say, it can mean that he understands the concept too, but he's still left with a bunch of unresolved questions. That shouldn't bother him. Let him still plow forward in learning, and eventually the questions can be dealt with later. Yeah.
What kind of Rebbe is that? Same Rebbe that they
have? Mepharsh Lechum. Okay, so he happens to have a Rebbe who doesn't know how to explain it to him, but nevertheless, he should still keep at it. Shanema, as the Pasuk says, also in Tehillim, Gorsa Napshi Lasava, the Pasuk says, the Gorsa Napshi, my neshama, my soul is Gorsa. Gorsa, the word Girsa, comes from a word that means that means a coarse kind of milling. Like when you mill flour, when you take grain and grind it into flour, you can do it in a coarse way where you have like big pieces, and then you can do it more finely to get fine flour. Gorsa, Girsa means like just the initial stage of milling when you still have just like big cracked broken pieces. So Girsa Napshi Latava, I have such a taiva, I have such a desire for Torah that I just do Girsa as much as possible, even if I can't do to be toichen it, to grind it down really fine and actually absorb it, at least I do Girsa. So you see, Girsa Ksiv like Sivtachna. It just says Girsa that he breaks into big chunks. Not tough enough that you grind it down fine, and that's the thing. That's exactly what we're saying. So for the time being, this is all you're capable of. Then you're yotze. Eventually, you get to the ability to be able to be toichen, to be able to grind it finer and learn it. Okay. Rava Rami. Okay. More on this topic of learning Torah and the way a person grows in their knowledge and in their abilities in Torah. Rava Rami. Rava pointed out a contradiction between two psukim. You have a chapter in Mishlei that describes metaphorically the Torah sitting, the Chochmah, meaning the Torah sitting like a woman inviting everybody in to partake of her feast, of the party that she's making, meaning come learn Torah. And you have one pasuk over there that says Al-Gafe, that she is sitting, and therefore that you will eventually sit, Al-Gafe, on the wings, and then a few psukim later, you have al kise, that on a chair. So what is that? On wings or on a chair? Betchila al gape, all of a sudden al kise. At first you're on wings, and later on you're on a chair. So what does that mean? Rashi says two explanations. Wings implies like you're not in a fixed place. You don't have a permanent spot. So like you're flitting around from one place to another. Eventually, a person sticks there, and eventually he's able to get al-kise, an honorable spot. So al-kise doesn't just mean a chair, like the regular chairs we sit on, it means something more like a throne, like raka-kise agdami mecha, Paris says to Yosef. Then Rashi says a second explanation that gafe, besides meaning wings, it can also mean solitary. In this week's parasha, begafe yove, begafe yetev, he comes in solitary, unmarried, begafe yetev, and he leaves solitary. Because his shifaknan, his wife and children don't go along with him. Actually, he can't even have them in that case if he's unmarried to begin with. So therefore, agape means the person starts out, he's alone, he has no tamidim, and later on, al-kise, later on, he's sitting on an honorable chair and has tamidim before him. There's a few other explanations also, including that it means that at first the person feels like the Torah is like flying overhead, like he can't grasp it, and eventually it's al-kise, it's something that he's able to master. What about another one? Ksiv Berosh Meroim and Ksiv Ale Derech. You have one pasuk also in that chapter. Actually, it's in the previous chapter in Mishlei. The pasuk describes that Torah is sitting and inviting everyone in. Berosh Meroim at the head of the heights. And then the pasuk continues. The same pasuk Ale Derech on the way. So what is it? Is it at the heights or is it on the way? Same thing. Betchila Berosh Meroim and Vosayf Ale Derech. Originally, it up in the heights, like something high, hidden, like something that's inaccessible to a person. But eventually, if a person keeps it, then it's Ale Derech, then actually Rashi says that what it is at first he's Berosh Meroimim, he's like up in the heights, like hidden from people's knowledge, and eventually he's Ale Derech, he's in full view of everybody teaching Torah and Paschim and Halacha and whatever. It's beyond that. In other words, the person first learns on their own and develops the ability to learn on their own, and eventually they become known, and then they start teaching Torah to others.
The real knowledge is when you can
teach. Mitalmidei Yosef Mikolam, right? The person learns Torah most from somebody. Yeah. Okay. Ula pointed out a contradiction between two halves of a pasuk. Again in Mishlei, you have a pasuk that says, "Say mayim mi'boracha, drink water from your pit." where a water pit is something that's not fresh water.
A water pit.
But the point is, a pit is something where the water is collected in there. It's stagnant. It's not fresh water. And eventually you use it up. You can eventually dry it out. Then the pasuk also continues, drink flowing water from your well, where a well is fresh water, because it's always welling forth, and it never dries out, because you always have the well spring below it. So what is it? Is the Torah a pit or a well? Same thing. Originally you're drinking from your pit. All of a sudden, eventually you're zocher that you have that the Torah becomes constantly flowing, living water that never stops when a person sticks it. It's brought also among other things that the word noizel implies something that flows from above to below. It's the shodosh of the word mazel, for example, when we talk about mazel Yisrael, in mazel Yisrael, for example, when we talk about the mazalos, whatever, it means a flow of hashva from above to below. So the same thing when we describe the Torah over here as v'noizlim, because that's what the Torah is. The Torah comes from Hashem. It's chachmoser ritzon Hashem kadosh baruch hu that comes down to us. So therefore, originally, in other words, the person is just the Torah is like a bow to him. But eventually, if he keeps it, then he's zeicha that the Torah comes down to him from Hashem. That we say what into it? What do we say into it? Oh right, no, that's true, right?
In a bear, it's coming from below, right?
Right, but that's the point. We're describing it as noizlim in the sense that it's actually in this sense coming from above.
Right.
Because that's why it's noizlim mitzvah le'erecha. You have both advantages. It's coming, you have a Sarusa de la Sata, but you also have a Sarusa de la Ela. It's no limit. Omer Rava Omer of Sora Omer of Vuna. My Dichtiv, what does it mean? A Pasuk says, yet another Pasuk in Kehelas, in Mishle rather. Most of, say, a good part of Sefer Mishle is about the importance of Chachma, of learning Torah, and of staying away from Minus and Nus and other negative things that we talked about a couple of days ago. So yet another pasuk, Ma'idichtiv Hon Mehevel Yimat. Literally, it means a fortune from nothingness, from vanity, will become less. V'koveitz al yad yirveh, and somebody who gathers bit by bit, like hand over hand, will increase. So the simple meaning is it means, in other words, a person can lose a huge fortune by frittering it away. Whereas if a person saves little by little, they can earn a big amount. But what does it mean in terms of Torah? If a person makes his Torah into big bundles, in the sense he learns a lot of material together, and therefore he doesn't really take the time to review it properly, so eventually he forgets it, mismai. So then eventually it becomes lessened. He forgets it. So with darshaning, many times we find a drosha where a hey and a ches interchange. So here we're taking the word mehevel and darshaning it as if it was mehevel. So hoin, a fortune of Torah, a huge amount of Torah, mechevel, but if a person does it as chavilo, it says big bundles, yimot, then it decreases. On the other hand, being kovitz, al yad, but if he gathers it bit by bit, he learns a bit at a time and makes sure to review it, so it's settled by him, then yirbeh, then it will increase. Then he'll learn more and more. Omar Rava, so Rava says, yadi rabbanan lahomil, so the rabbanan, the chachamim of our time, know this statement, the Avri Allah, and yet they they're over on it. They don't do that. They learn huge amounts at a time. In other words, apparently that they're not doing Chazar. But Omer of Nachmei Yitzchok said, says, "I know Avicha. I fulfilled the statement to learn a little at a time and make sure that it's well settled and well reviewed by me. The Kayim Biyadi, and sure enough, the Torah has lasted by me." Marsha actually, Tosfos brings a girsa over here. Tosfos brings a girsa that they had in Gemara's in front of them, that not Avisa, I did it, but Avrisa, I was over on it. And Tosfos says, why would he be priding himself on being over that? Yeah. However, Marsha says, so why are the, what is Rava saying? Why are the Chachamim being over on it? And Marsha explains, because the Chachamim of Rava's time understood that this last thing over here about learning a little bit at a time and reviewing it contradicts some of the things that we were saying before about learning Torah as much as possible, even if you don't fully understand it, because eventually you will. So they were over on this one in order to fulfill the other one. And therefore, Rav Nachman Reis Chok, according to the Girsa that Tosfos brings but rejects, Rav Nachman Reis Chok is saying the same thing. I was also over on it, which means that I was fulfilling the other things that we learned before, and that helped. The Torah was Niskayim by me. So not necessarily, in other words, is this thing, this last one that we mentioned about learning a bit at a time, is not necessarily the thing for everybody. For some people, it might be appropriate, but not necessarily. The Rabbanon, who know, the Rabbanon can knowingly be over on it in order to be Mekayim, what we said by the other statements that we said. So I guess that's similar to the last thing we just said, that you're learning a bit at a time, but reviewing it. I mean, they're delving very deeply into it. That's a different thing, yeah. Okay. All right. My dichtiv, what does it mean? Another pasuk from Mishlei. Lo yachrich rmiya tzedei, the deceitful person will not singe, meaning will not, the simple meaning is it will not be able to cook, to roast, or whatever, tzedei, his catch, or what he caught. So that's the simple meaning of the pasuk, that a deceitful person, even if he goes and tries to trap and trick and whatever people, he's not going to be able to cook it. In other words, he's never going to end up enjoying it. But what does it mean again in terms of Torah, given that pretty much everything in Mishlei is about the value or the importance of learning Torah properly? It means we dash in the word lo yachrich as short for two words, yichya and yarich. It means lo yichya v'lo yarich yomim. It means a person who is a deceitful hunter will not live lo yarich yamim, and he won't have long days when he's a deceitful hunter, in the sense of going with what we were mentioning before, that he fools people into thinking that he's learned a lot, and he makes it look like therefore he's a great Talmud Chacham. Meanwhile, he's not reviewing it properly, so he's remia, he's doing it in a deceitful way, as we were saying before, so therefore he ends up forgetting it. So if he learns Torah properly, then Torah is chayach va'orach emecha. Like this, where he's doing it improperly, and therefore just learning as much as possible, huge amounts of material, in order to be able to impress people, look how much I know, but not learning it in a way where it's actually going to stick with him, then he's not going to live long, and he's not going to have a long life.
Now, there's the problem with Chazara, he's able to give it over to people and impress them.
That's the point, but he's not doing chazara, so therefore he forgets it.
So that's
the virgin. In other words, that a person shouldn't be doing that. A person should make sure that they're not just learning, that they're also reviewing, in order that they don't forget.
So we're
saying a different drasha, a different drasha that expresses the same idea in different words.
Why do we have to?
Because a lot of times each one teaches us a different detail. You also have, you know, the file. I mean, what is Mishlei? Mishlei is Mishalim. These are parables that Shlomo HaMelech did to bring these ideas to people. And, you know, in Sefer Melachim, it describes, as it says over there, that Shlomo had three, that Shlomo spoke 3,000 moshel. And in a number of places in Chassidus, actually, the Gemara talks about someplace that it means that he had 3,000 mosholim for each idea in Torah. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea that actually what's a moshel is you're taking some deep concept and bringing it down into something more digestible to people below your level. Shlomo would have to, he would give one marshal for the idea, but even that marshal was beyond his listeners, so he'd have to give a second marshal to explain the first marshal, and a third marshal to explain the second marshal, and eventually, after 3,000 times of that, he'd bring it down to a level that people can understand, and then from the 3,000th marshal, they can understand the 2999th, and then work their way back up. So in different places in Mishlei, Shlomo has to give different Mishalim to express these ideas.
But Moshe Rabbeinu used to teach directly.
Moshe Rabbeinu taught because he's teaching them Torah. He's teaching them halachas. Shlomo HaMelech is teaching people divrei chokhma. He's teaching them the proper approach to learning, the proper approach to life, or whatever. It's different. Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's one explanation. But Rav Sheshes says no. The pasuk is not saying negatively about a person. It's actually, the pasuk is making a positive statement. Sayad haramai yachrei. The hunter who is a tricky one, is the hunter who is tricky about it, is actually going to be able to cook, is actually going to be able to roast, to catch, and be able to enjoy it. In other words, therefore, so here we're talking about just the opposite. We're talking about somebody who learns a little bit at a time and reviews it a lot. So that, therefore, so the Pasuk is not saying something bad against him, just the opposite. The Pasuk is saying, like as a rhetorical question, lo yachrich remia tzedei, do you think the person who's remia, who's tricky about it, he's careful about how he goes about his learning, should he not get to roast his catch? Of course he should, because he will preserve his learning, and he'll be able to enjoy it.
So
and he'll be able to use it.
Ramiya,
in the sense, like a tricky person, like he's tricky about how he goes about it. So people would argue to him, what are you doing? You have the capability of learning a lot, of learning a lot more at a time. So just the opposite. He's a Ramai Va'orum Badavar. He's a crafty kind of person. It brings on the side over here from Rashi and Eruvin, because this Gemara is also an Eruvin. The word Orum, and therefore the word Ramai, is not necessarily in and of itself a negative thing. It can mean a person who is tricky about how to do the right thing. Orum Yira, right. That a person should be Orum, that a person should be crafty when it comes to Yiras Shemayim to figure out the right way to do it and to hide it as much as possible from people. Yeah. He also Rav Dimi Amar, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained, what does this mean? Why are we comparing a person learning Torah to a trapper anyway, to a hunter anyway? Mashal Adam Shatzad Tidbarin, it's like a person who's trapping birds. Im Meshabak Nafel Shorishoina, if he actually catches the first bird, he breaks its wings, so it can't fly away. Kulam Miskaimis Biyadid, then all the other ones he'll be able to keep, because all the other ones will stay with the first one. If not, then the first one will fly away, and the second one will, and he won't end up enjoying what he caught.
If he breaks
the wings of the first one after he catches it. Marsha brings from the Gemara in Eruvin that understands it a little bit differently. Not that the Girsa over there is not that he breaks the wings just of the first one, but he breaks the wings of every single one as he catches it. So that way he can't fly away. Then he can keep them. The same way, if a person, so to speak, breaks the wings on each part of Torah that he learned, that he reviews it over and over and over again, so it doesn't fly away, then he will get to enjoy it. He'll get something out of it. Oh, yeah, but if you're doing it for a purpose. You're doing it for a purpose, so they don't fly away. Okay. Maybe it could be that he's breaking his Yetzer Hara, yeah. Okay. All right. Going back now to the Kapitel Tillim that we started Daushening before, Kapitel Aleph, we did Ashrei Ish, we did Kim Besarat Hashem Cheftoi. The third pasuk of that Kapitel continues, he will be like a tree that's planted by streams of water. Now, Shosol, Rashi points out, the word Shosol implies a tree that originally was planted in one place and then it was replanted someplace else. Otherwise, the expression for something planted in the first place is Natua. So, do Amri Dvei Rav Yanai, so they pointed out, Shosol is, no, Shosol means replanted. Neka Mikan, because of a Nishtol B'Makam Achara, she says it's uprooted from one place and replanted someplace else. So, Amri Dvei Rav Yanai, so they said in the Yeshiva of Rav Yanai, what that means is exactly that. Ke'etz Shosol v'lo'ke'etz Natua, it means a person has to be, a Talmud Chacham has to be like a replanted tree, not like a tree planted in its original spot. Meaning, a person learns Torah from only one Rebbe, then he's not going to see a simen bracha in his learning. Because you have to learn from different people in order that you learn the different approaches and the different approaches to a topic. So therefore, you have to be like shosol. You plant it in one place, in one yeshiva, and eventually you leave and go to another yeshiva, etc.
Oh.
Well, Amar lahu Rav
Chiya. What happened historically?
What do you mean? A lot of times.
Students didn't go to the
Tzilek. Says who?
Says who they didn't.
So you have, for example, we know that Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai learned by both of them, for example. Okay, we don't know the names of all of them. We only know the names of two of their Talmidim, of Hillel and Shammai's Talmidim. We have him, and we have Yonis and Benazir. We don't know the names of the other 78 Talmidim. So, but yeah.
I think because they did understand the purposes of each other.
Yeah, well, they understood. There is also that they accepted them. Right. So all that. But here we're talking about to actually learn by one of them and then go to learn by the other. Okay, we find that many times. We find Rav Meir going and learning by Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. We find Rebbe learning by many of the Tanoim from the generation before him. We find many such examples.
Don't you have a concept of a little person that he only sees the Torah as his Rebbe and nobody else?
You can have. Sometimes you have. For example, the Gemara tells us about Rabbi Lazar that even though he learned by Rav and Shmuel, but most of his life he learned by Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore when he said over something without saying who it was from, we can assume it was from Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, but the fact is, he did first learn by Rav and then by Shmuel before he moved out to Yisrael and learned by Rabbi Yechanan. Okay.
But he was forced anyway, no?
Well, no, Rabbi Lazar wasn't. No, you're thinking of Rav Kahana, who was forced to move to Yisrael.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. So in this connection, Rav Chisda says to the Rabbanan, to his Talmidim, but in your de'em l'chum milsa, I would like to tell you a statement, but I am afraid that if I tell it to you, that you're going to abandon me and you're going to leave my yeshiva. And that is this statement that we just said, that a person learns Torah from one Rebbe, he won't see a simon bracha in his learning. So sure enough, they left him. But also came the Rava, and they went to learn by Rava. Or on the side of it here, it says the Rava, because Rava really is the next generation. They wouldn't have learned by him yet. But Rava was a younger contemporary of Rukhista. Amalahu said, Rav Chisda tells them, no, you misunderstood what's going on over here. And that's why I was afraid if I tell it to you, you're going to misunderstand it. I figured you'll understand it, but I was afraid you wouldn't, and I see that I was right. Tani mili svara. This is when it comes to learning svara, when it comes to learning the svara, so the charifus, Rashi says, to learn after you know the facts, again, to deal with the populium and the different approaches or whatever, that should be from different rebbeim, because every person, every rebbe has a different style of learning, has a different style of analyzing analyzing what you've learned and then deducing things from it and whatever. Gemara, but when it comes to the basic facts of the Gemara, the basic underlying reasoning, Meirav Echad Odif, that kind of thing is better to learn from one rabbi. This way you don't divide, you don't get mixed up the different ways of phrasing it. Because we find many times in the Gemara, Rashi points out, we have where the Gemara will quote something, and then it'll have Lishna Achrina, another wording of the same thing, which is the second wording amounts to pretty much the same thing as the second, with a little bit of nuance or difference.
Because in different yeshivas, they learned in different wordings. So therefore, because they're, again, different people have different style as far as speaking. So therefore, if you learn Gemara, if you learn the basic concepts of the Gemara from different rebbeim, and each one says it in their own wording, then you're likely to get confused among the different wordings. As opposed to once you have the basic facts in hand, then by all means you should be learning by different rebbeim to learn each one's different approach to learning. Of course, they didn't even have written Gemaras yet. This is all still Baal Peh. Yeah, that's the point, right? Okay. Yes. More on learning Torah. Oh, sorry. Al palge mayim. Continuing, we said the pasuk says that a person is planted al palge mayim. Now, literally, it means on streams of water. But the word palge we can also understand to be related to the Aramaic word polag, which means to divide, to split up. It's the root of the word in the one we have in the Gemara, the word in the Gemara plugta, a machloikas, because you have the different opinions split up on different sides of the issue and whatever. So Amar of Tanchum Bachaniloi, it means that there's supposed to be a certain splitting when it comes to learning. La'olam yeshalish adam shnoitzav, a person should always divide his years into three. Shlish v'mikra, shlish v'mishna, shlish v'talmud. One third of it he should be learning Mikra, Tanakh, one third Mishnah, and one third Talmud. Where Mishnah and Talmud, by the way, don't necessarily only mean what we have in front of us as the printed Mishnayos and the printed Gemara. Again, the Alter Rebbe talks about, and in many other places it talks about, the basic idea. Rashi talks in a number of places. Mishnah means the basic facts of halacha, which is what the Mishnayos we have are in front of us are. Talmud is the analysis of it, which is what the Gemara does, analyzing what this that the Mishnah is saying, what's the source for it, where does it apply in all cases across the board or only in some cases, what about it contradicts this, all the meat and potatoes of Gemara. But therefore, also, for example, with later Sfarim, you have the same kind of thing. Let's say Shulchan Aruch itself, the pnim of the Shulchan Aruch is more like Mishnah. It's just the bold halachas without reasoning, without anything. And then you have the Noisei Kalim, you have the Meforshim on the side, the Magen Avraham and the Shach and the Taz and the Chelkas Mechokas and so forth that analyze and clarify and explain in what cases does this apply or whatever is more like Talmud, is more like Gemara. There's other things also. There's Midrashim. Where does Midrashim fit into this? Where does Kabbalah fit into this, etc. So Midrashim, if I remember correctly, count under Talmud because, again, it's analyzing Psukim and whatever and deducing things from it. Kabbalah, I think, also counts under Talmud, but I don't remember.
How do they learn a third of their life?
So that's the question. One second. Mi yoda inish kamachaya. Is a person supposed to know how long he's going to live? That a person should say, for example, okay, I know I'm going to live to be 90 years old, so I'll learn 30 years of one and 30 years of the next, etc. A person doesn't know. And that's the answer. Ki kamrin and biyomi. What we mean is as far as days. So what does it mean, days? Rashi understands it means, therefore, every week, a person should spend 2 days a week learning Tanakh, 2 days Mishnah, 2 days Talmud, and that way it's every week like that. What does he do on the seventh day, on Shabbos? Some of Poshim say he should be reviewing. Some of Poshim say he should be taking it a little easier because Shabbos is supposed to be Oneg. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation because, after all, you could still ask. The person doesn't know if he's going to die in the middle of a week or something. So, therefore, Tosfos says what it means is, L'yomi means each day itself should be divided into different parts for learning Mikra, Mishnah, and Talmud. Tosfos points out, therefore, this that Tosfos says actually is brought from the Gaonim, therefore, we have in davening, we have Psukim, we have Mikra, we have the Psukim of the Talmud, another Psukim that we say over there in morning davening. We have Ezo Makoman, which is Mishnayos. We have the Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel, which is Talmud. So in that sense, every day, we're being Makayim this to learn, to divide our time into three. Tosfos also points out that we spend a disproportionate amount of our time learning Gemara. The Gemara itself is blended from all these three things. The Gemara often analyzes Pesukim, as we're having over here. It has a Mishnah, and then it has the Talmud, the analysis of it. So therefore, by learning Talmud Bavli itself, you have all three together.
Which also divides
it into three, yeah. And you have there's different details in it also. The Rambam says it literally means as far as a person's time. The Rambam gives an example. Let's say a person has 9 hours a day to learn. Three of them should be Mikra, three of them Mishnah, three of them Talmud. However, the Rambam says eventually when a person develops in their level of learning and they reach the point where they don't really need to be learning Mikra and Mishnah regularly, then they should occasionally be reviewing them because, as we said before, it's important to review what you learn so you don't forget it, but spend most of the time on Talmud. And again, that fits with what Tosfos is saying over here, that we focus mostly on Talmud Bavli because it's blended from all three of them.
So what does Chassidus count in?
Chassidus, if I remember correctly, counts in Talmud under that. So it's the same thing. In other words, so you have Chassidus is a blend of all these things. So therefore, yeah.
What's the important thing? Chomish LeMikra? Or
then Chomish LeMikra, Ben Esther LeMishnah, et cetera, right. So
Ben Esther LeMishnah, by at 10 years old, they learned all Mishnah, probably Bafei or whatever. They knew it well.
Right, but that's what we're saying.
Not a third, though.
Right, that's not a third. That's what the Gemara is saying. We're not talking about a third of 1 year. We're talking about a third of 1 week, according to Rashi.
In other words, afterwards, it's just making Kozaro. They already learned it at 10 years old.
Right, okay, well, and if they did, yeah.
By that time, they forgot it.
Oh, well. Okay. Your testament, you're the top. You remind me, by the way, since you're mentioning about Chassidus. So, the famous thing that we say that a person has to learn Chassidus because, as the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, you have to have kav chumtin. When you have a storehouse full of wheat or whatever, you have to put in some salty earth into there to preserve it, otherwise it rots. So the Rebbeim always talk about the idea that the Chassidus is that kav chumtin. So someplace I can't remember where I've seen this, but someone once asked in that case, so what's the proportion? We say over there you need kav chumtin for a kur of grain. A kav to a kur is a proportion of 1 to 180. In that case, fine. 1/180th of the day should be learning Chassidus. A day is 24 hours. You divide it down by 180. You end up, it's about 8 minutes. So what are you learning Chassidus? Much longer than that. And the answer was, yes, but the Gemara doesn't just say you put in the kav chumtin. If you mix it in. Mixing takes time. Yeah. Okay.
The
context over there is the Gemara is saying that a person has to learn, but there has to be Yiras Hashem here. Yiras Hashem is what makes it preserved. Okay. All right. Continuing, darshining the Pesukim, Asher Piryo Yitin B'Itoy, the Pesuk there in Tillim continues that it gives its fruit in its proper time. So what does that mean? Implying that there could be a person who doesn't give its fruit in its proper time and it's no good. Amar Rava. So and the pasuk. What does the pasuk say? Ashapiri yitin beito va'olehu lo yibo. And the pasuk continues that its leaves don't dry up and drop off, implying that there could be a person who doesn't give off peiros beito and therefore the leaves do drop off. So what does that mean? Amar Rava. Imperia yitin beito. If he gives his fruit in its proper time. Then his leaves will not drop off. In other words, they'll still stay fresh and good in Torah learning.
The imlav, but if not, then al haloimed v'al hamalamed, regarding the person who learned and the person who taught him, because you're not allowed to teach Torah to a no good Talmud, on such people. Aleihem akasavim aleichen harashayim kiim v'goyim. On them, the pasuk says, the fourth pasuk over there, not so the rashayim. So what does it mean, a person who gives his fruit?
How can you go out and get people from a college campus and teach them Torah?
Because they don't know better. They're tunekas shenishbu. A Talmud she'enei hogun means that you know already the person has bad midos or whatever. And then I'm says, actually, it still doesn't mean you write them off completely. It means a Talmud she'enei hogun, first you teach him good midos, and then you start working on teaching him Torah. Yeah, when they bring in these boys and girls from college campuses or whatever, not that they have bad midos, it's they don't know. So you start teaching them. Okay, so what is this person who does not give who does or doesn't give forth his fruit in its proper time? So Rashi says two explanations. One is that it means that it's keveya itim latorah, that he sets aside fixed times for learning, as opposed to just whenever I get around to it. So if he does that, then good, and if not, then no good. The second explanation Rashi says is that his Torah gives forth fruit in the sense that not only he learns, but he keeps what he learns. No, he keeps what he actually does the mitzvahs that he's learning about, as opposed to he just learns without doing the mitzvah. That's no good. Rashi prefers that explanation. Tosfos brings another explanation that it means, as the Gemara is going to tell us, in the next couple of lines, that there's a point in a person's learning when he's not yet ready to be teaching and to be paskening halacha, and then he shouldn't. And there comes a point in a person's development when he is ready to be teaching and to paskening halacha, and then he should be. So therefore, we're talking about over here, Asher Piri Yitin Be'itzer, he gives forth his fruit in its proper time. When he's ready to be teaching, then he does so. When not, then not.
So those are the various explanations of
giving his fruit forth in its proper time. Okay. So in this connection, Amar of Abba, Amar of Huna, Amar Rav, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk, yet again from Mishlei, ki rabim chalolim hipila, because she has knocked down, has struck down many many corpses, many dead people. The whole pasuk goes ki rabim kol chaloleha, ki rabim chalolim hipila, and many are the corpses that she's knocked down, va'atsumim kol aruga, and many and a multitude are the ones that she's killed. So what does this refer to? This refers to a Talmud who's not yet at the stage where he's able to paskin halacha, where he's able to teach and to paskin umoda, and he does so. So then, like he's teaching when he's not ready for it yet. So it's called hipila. Rashi says meloshin nafil. A nafil is a premature baby. So this person is like a premature baby. He's not yet ready to be teaching, but he's going and arrogating himself to do that, and it causes tremendous problems. On the other hand, ba'atsumim kol harugah, when the pasuk continues, many are its victims, are the ones that are killed, is the other way around. The Talmud shehigia lahiro v'enim murder. This refers to a Talmud who is capable of teaching. He is at the stage and at the age and at the stage and knowledge when he's capable of teaching and capable of paskening, and he holds himself back and doesn't. So therefore, Rashi says the word atsumim, besides that the simple meaning of atsumim means many. But we can also understand that as being related to the word ba'otzim eino. He closes his eyes. So like he pretends, I can't see that there are people over there who need to learn from me, and he pretends like
we all, if we reach that level, we have that obligation.
Then we have that obligation. That's the point, yeah. And each person on their own level, in a way. I mean, you have the famous expression that even if all you know is Aleph and the other person doesn't even know that, then teach them Aleph. No, but that's the point. In other words, if a person were to be atzumim, if a person were to close his eyes and say, but I only know Aleph, I have no business teaching somebody else Aleph, That would also be a certain form of atzumim kol aruga. There's a vort on it brought from the Vilna Gaon that said, in connection to this last week's parasha, we had the Aseret HaDibros. We have Tam Elyon and we have Tam Tachton, the two different sets of truth that we lay in the Aseret HaDibros with. In one of them, we have the short Dibros, loy tirtzach, loy tinach, loy tignav, or each separate sukkim of their own. In the other one, they're all parts of one long pasuk. And there's also a difference in the Nekuda. You have in Tam Elyon, as we read it in Shul, it's loy tirtzach with a comma. When we read it privately for Chitas and Shai Mekavecha Targum, we say it loy tirtzach with a patach. So he says this is actually a hint at these two things.
So what do we read? Instead of Latina, we read Latina.
That's another difference, right? So the technical reason behind it, the Alter Rebbe talks about it at some length in Shulchan Aruch,
The technical reason behind it is because in Tam Tachton, all of that is one pasuk, and you have the word loy sirtzach are together. They're there. You have a mercha and a tipcha. You have the truck mercha and tipcha, which are connected. Mercha is a connecting truck, so therefore it connects the sirtzach, as opposed to in Tam Tachton, you have a tipcha and a soif pasuk. A tipcha is a separating truck, and therefore you have a sof.
So
loy tirtzach, because after a tipcha you're always going to have a tough rather than a soft. Yeah.
But there are cases where you.
The Zohar actually says that. Yes, there are cases where you do have to tirtzach. For example, the Mrs. Basin. But anyway, here I'm talking about something else. The Vilna Gaon says a vort on it. That so you have there's a time when a person is killing through kumet. Kumet literally means you close your mouth. That's you pronounce a kumet by closing your mouth. Kaufman. So therefore that refers to the second person of it who closes his mouth when he should be opening it and teaching. And the other one in Tam Tachton, Loy Tirtzach with a Patach, is when he opens his mouth, Patach meaning open, when he should be closing it, the first person over here.
Okay, so the question is the Ad Kama.
So what is the age when a person is ready to be teaching? Ad Memshinim, the answer is when he's 40 years old. The question is about Rava Ovi, but we find that Rava, or a different gear says Rabba, taught, and he was less than 40 years old, because Rashi says, the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah, he only lived to be 40 years old, and he was a Rosh Hashiva, so obviously he became Rosh Hashiva and Rav before 40 years old. There's some historians claim that actually both Rava and Rabba lived longer than 40 years, and therefore what is the Gemara asking, but still, according to that, They claim on the basis of a different understanding of the Gemara over there in Rosh Hashanah or whatever that Rabbah actually lived to be 60 years old. However, he was Rosh Hashiva for 22 years, so he became Rosh Hashiva 38 years old, still below 40. The answer is Hossam B'Shovin. That when we say 40 years, we're talking about when he's on an equal level with other people. When there's other people of his caliber who are over 40, then he should be deferring to them. They should be the ones teaching, and he should be the Talmud until then. If there's nobody of his caliber, which was the case with Rava or Rabba, then he can be teaching even younger than 40 years old. And by the way, we learned near the beginning of the Masechta, the famous thing, that Loi Koy Inish Adaita De Rabba Ad Aboyim Shinin, a person doesn't fully understand what his Rebbe said until he's 40 years old. The Tosfos discusses over there, based on our Gemara over here, maybe it means not 40 years from when he heard the topic from his Rebbe, but rather when he's actually 40 years old, because we're saying over here, until 40 years old, a person doesn't have full understanding. Rashi over here says we shouldn't know that, because that's definitely what it means. Yeah, it definitely means 40 years when he was born. But before, when we said that Loikoi Inish Adaita Dirabe, that person doesn't fully understand what his Rebbe says until 40 years, so does it mean 40 years since he heard the thing, or does it mean 40 years since he was born? Okay, going back to the Pasuk now, the Pasuk continues, V'alehu lo yibo, his leaves do not drop off. So what does that mean? What are the leaves in connection with the Talmud Chacham? If we're comparing a Talmud Chacham to a tree, then what are the leaves? Amr of Achaba Ada Amr Rav, Ba'amilo Amr of Achaba Abba Amr of Hamnuna Amr Rav. So one version is he heard it directly from Rav, and the other is he heard it from Rav Hamnuna, who heard it from Rav. That Shafilu Sichat Cholin, Shatamar Chachamim, Sichat Talmud. Even the casual speech of Tamar Chachamim, which is like leaves relative to their fruit, the actual Torah they teach is like the fruit that you actually enjoy. The Sichat Cholin is like leaves, it's not something particularly important. Well, in a tree, but nevertheless, even that needs to be learned. You can still derive important things from even just the casual talk of a Talmud Chacham. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, but aleihu lo yibo, that is, leaves don't drop off. In other words, nothing that a Talmud Chacham does goes to waste. So that's it. As the Gemara mentions, for example, in Sukkah, in this connection, for example, Rabbi Gamliel points out to the Chachamim that look at my slave Tavi who's sleeping under the bed in the sukkah because he's an Eved and he knows he's potter from the mitzvah of sukkah. So therefore we learn from that Sichas Kolin. Here Rabbi Gamliel is not saying it to teach a halacha, but we learn from his casual conversation with the Chachamim that if you sleep under a bed in a sukkah, you're not yotze. So that's an example of that kind of thing.
Are you eavesdropping on this, or are you just listening to the way they're speaking?
You listen to the way they're speaking as itself teaches you something.
There are many people who actually dafka speak in a sukkah.
No, but not under the bed.
Under the bed.
No,
yeah.
That's the point. If we're talking about a bed that's at least 10 tefachim off the ground.
Yeah.
No, we're talking about where the bed is at least 10 tefachim off the ground, so therefore it's like a different oil.
whatever. The point still, the point is though that we see that even Sichas Kol of a Talmud Chacham teaches us something. The pasuk continues, "V'chol asher yaseh yatzliach." Everything that he does is successful. So what does that mean? Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, "Dover zeh kosav haTorah." What we see from this pasuk is actually something that we find it first written in a pasuk in Chumash, "V'shonei b'Neviim," and it's so important that's repeated in Neviim, or "M'shulash b'Ksuvim," and then repeated a third time in Ksuvim. That kol osik b'Torah and the kosav matzlichim, that a person who is involved in Torah, his nechosim, his property, is matzliach for him, is successful for him. On the side of it here, Agoros Agrua brings that drachav matzlichim, his ways are successful for him. So where do we see that? Kosav b'Torah d'chtiv, because you have a pasuk, u'shmartim as divrei abris hazos. Moshe tells the Jewish people, the end of Parashas Kisavo, you should keep the words of this covenant of the Torah, v'asisem osem, and do them. L'man taskilu es kol asher tasun, in order that you will be successful in everything that you do. So you see that a person learning Torah makes him successful in his gashmiyistika affairs.
Shonri b'Neviim, it's repeated in Neviim.
In that the pasuk says, "Dichtiv," Hashem says to Yeshua, "Lo yomush sefer haTorah zamipicha." This sefer Torah should not move away, should not ever be not in your mouth. You should delve into it day and night. Laman tishmer lasas kechol hakosav bo, in order that you should keep do everything that it says in it. Ki oz tatzliach atdrachacha v'oz tafkil, because then your ways will be successful, and then you will be wise and you'll be capable.
We don't apply that to the one who teaches Torah.
No, we're talking about a person who's oisek b'Torah, a person who's involved in Torah, whether as a student or as a teacher. Mishulosh b'ksuvim, and it's repeated a third time in ksuvim, the pasuk from Tillim that we were quoting. D'chtiv kim v'saras Hashem chepto, or v'sarasa yega yemim v'layla, the Torah of Hashem is his desire. In his Torah, he delves into it day and night. The pasuk continues, v'hol yokeitz chosel apagimayim, he will be like a tree that's planted or replanted by streams of water, ashapiria yitid b'itzer, that it gives its fruit in its proper time, v'olayu lo yivol, even its leaves are important, even its leaves don't fall off, v'chol asher yaseh yatzliach, and everything that he does is successful. So that's the same idea repeated for a third time to underscore how important it is. It should be. I mean, it doesn't always happen that way, of course. But in the sense of whatever his drachim are matzliach, it doesn't necessarily mean. I mean, elsewhere the Gemara talks about that bona chayo mazone are totally in mazel, not in mais and tovim. Right, so we're talking about it. I guess there's a difference between his drachas, his ways being successful, and actually having gashmiyistik plenty. It's not necessarily the same thing, but in whatever it is, at least he has it. Yeah. Okay. Machriz Rebbe Alexandri. Rebbe Alexandri one time came and announced, man boi chaye, who wants life? Who wants life?
We saw that one.
No, we know. Konuf va'asa kula alma l'gabei, so everybody gathered around him. Who wouldn't want the secret to life? Amrile havlon chaye, they're all telling him, give us life. Alma l'hui, so he tells them, as the pasuk says, mi ha'isha chafetz chayim v'gayim, who is the person who wants life, v'gayim, netzer l'shon chamera, v'gayim, keep your tongue away from speaking evil, sur me'rav asei toi, v'gayim, turn away from evil and do good. So this is kind of going back to, this is going back to a similar, the same way as we said before, ashrei ish shalalak, and we talk about all the negative things that a person could be doing, and then there's the positive team, so this expresses a similar idea. So, Shema Yema Adam Nasati Lashoni Mirol, Svasim Yamim Mirma. So, a person might argue, okay, I've kept my tongue away from speaking evil, I've kept my lips from speaking something deceitful. So therefore, I've stayed away from the evil. I don't need to do anything else. Eilach ves gada b'sheina. Now I can go and provoke myself to sleep. Like we said yesterday, I have nothing better to do. I may as well just go to sleep.
No.
Talmud Lema, sur me'rav aseh tov. Therefore, the pasuk continues, turn away from evil and do good. It's not just good enough to stay away from evil. You also have to be doing something positive. And what is tov? The ein tov, ela Torah. The true good is Torah. Shenemar ki lekach tov nasati lachem. I've given you a good teaching. Torosi al tazevu. Don't abandon my Torah. So we see, therefore, it's not just enough that a person is staying away from speaking Lashon Hara and whatever. A person also needs to be using their time for something productive.
What do we say?
That's a different kind of Torah. Okay, I mean,
so what is, and
because there's different kinds of Torah. But I mean, in particular, also, of course, for one thing, actually, the Gemara talks about in Kiddushin that there's a question: should a person get married first and then learn Torah? On one hand, then he's going to have troubles of Parnasa. On the other hand, then if he doesn't get married, then he's going to have trouble with his Yetzer Hara. So it depends. So sometimes getting married actually enables a person to learn Torah, and in that sense, the Torah of Isha enables him to have the Torah of Torah. But yeah.
So now back to
Hamon. We learned in the Mishnah, we said in the Mishnah that there are various kinds of buildings that you're not allowed to build, that you're allowed to build. We said there's various buildings you're not allowed to build with Goyim, including stadiums, which is what led us into this whole thing. We said there are certain kinds of buildings you are allowed to build with them. Dimusios, as Rashi said, meaning altars, or dimusios, as Tosfos said, meaning bathhouses or other public buildings, things like that. But we said, once you reach the dome or the niche in the building, the place where, as usual, they put a getchka, where they put a statue to decorate the place, then it's also to continue building at that point. So, what happens if he did? Amar Abulaza, Amar Abiyachin, and Imbanas, Chorem Mutter, if a person did go ahead and illegally continue building that part of the building, the dome or the niche or whatever, his schar for that part is Mutter. We don't say that his schar is now also because it involves Avodah Zarah. So the question is, Pshita, well, isn't that obvious? Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, and after all, that niche or that dome is not in and of itself the Avodah Zarah. It's only something that serves the Avodah Zarah. It's the pedestal or whatever where they would be placing the Avodah Zarah. And Umashamsha Avodah Zarah, Bein L'Rabbi Shmuel, Bein L'Rabbi Akiva, and both according to Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, who have a machloikus later on in our Masechta, which we're gonna touch on briefly in a couple of lines, but they have a machloikus. At what point does a statue become osur b'hanah for a Jew when it's made or when it's first worshipped? But both of them agree that when it comes to mishamshei avodas kochavim, when it comes to things that are only used as things to serve the getchke, like not the getchke, not the idol itself, but rather things that are used to serve it, such as a pedestal. Both of them agree. Bein le'Rabbi Shmuel, bein le'Rabbi Akiva. They're definitely not also until the statue is actually worshipped. So of course then, if he builds the niche over here, then it'll be mutter for him to keep his schar, because the niche itself is not what's worshipped. What's the chiddush? You're right. This that Rabbi Lazar is saying, that his schar is mutter, is not talking about if he built the niche. It's talking about if the Jew went ahead and actually made the statue for the guy, then he'll still be allowed to keep his pay. So the question is why? That works out according to the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel that says that when it comes to an idol of a Jew, it's also as soon as it's made. A goy's statue only becomes also bahana once it's worshipped. So this one hasn't been worshipped yet. Therefore, sure, you could argue that it's schar is mutter. But according to the opinion, which is the halacha, that even a goy's statue is also as soon as it is also bahana, as soon as it's made, even before it's worshipped, ma'i kalameima. Then what are you going to say? Why should a Jew be allowed to keep the money that he got from making a statue? Ella, no. Omer, Rav Bar Ula, lo nitzucha ella b'makush achon. No, but the point of what Rabbi Lazar is saying, that he's allowed to keep his pay, is talking about. We're talking about he did the final hammer blow. That makes it, now it's complete. Now it's a complete statue.
Nothing.
Why? Now, why is that? Why should he be, why are we not saying that his schar is osur? Because, avodas kochavim man kegorim lo, gmar malacha, because what makes it a usable statue, what makes it the goyim will be able to use it and worship it, is gmar malacha, is the last little bit, the end of the malacha, the final finishing touch that makes it into a complete statue. Well, the Amos have a gemar malacha, the makushachwin. What is that gemar malacha? Is that last hammer blow that makes it into a complete thing? Well, makushachwin, less be shava pruta. That last hammer blow is not worth a shava pruta. In other words, what happens? Alma kasava, which means that Rabbi Lazar holds, which is the halacha, yeshna l'schirus mitchilav adsoi. That when a person is hired to do a job, we say every bit of the job he does, he's now earned X amount of his pay for it. So he does a prutha's worth of work. At that point, now the other guy owes him a prutha. He does the next prutha's worth. Now the guy owes him another prutha, etc.
Even actually, we're saying that the value comes at the last touch.
No. What we're saying is like this. We're saying that he's getting paid. Let's say he's getting paid 100 prutas for the job. So he, when he does the first prutha's worth of it, he's now owed one prutha,
right.
Another prutha, a second one, a third one, etc.
Right.
Eventually, he gets to the point, he's done 99 prutha's worth of work. At this point, if he were to stop, the other guy owes him 99 prutha's for the work. Now it comes to the 100th prutha, but within that prutha itself, you have to bang the hammer on the thing a number of times in order for it to be worth a prutha. You might have, let's say, 5 hammer blows equal 1 prutha.
Right.
So therefore, the last hammer blow is what makes it able to be used as a statue. That last hammer blow is worth less than a prutha.
Is he getting paid for the whole job, though?
No, but that's the point. In other words, he is getting paid for the whole job, but up until that last hammer blow, it was definitely not an Avodah Zarah because it couldn't be used yet.
Right.
The goy wasn't going to worship it yet when it's incomplete.
But he wouldn't be getting paid for an incomplete job either.
True.
So then,
well,
how can you say that he owes in 99% or 99 prutas of something that's worth 100 that's not worth a penny unless there's 100 unless it's finished?
No, because it is. The work that he did so far is worth a certain amount.
But we're saying that it's not finished.
He's not gonna worship it yet. He can't worship it until it's finished.
So that's it.
So therefore you have what he did, the last hammer blow, which is what makes it an object of worship, which makes it also b'hanah,
right,
is worth less than a prutta. And Tosfos adds a detail like this, that the fact of the matter is, if he didn't do the last hammer blow, the fact is, it's not like the goy would pay him any less than the 100 prutas, let's say. He would still, let's say the guy couldn't do the last hammer blow or whatever. He had another urgent job to do or whatever. The goy would still pay him the full 100 prutas. The guy would say, okay, I'll do the last hammer blow myself or whatever. So therefore, you can't say that hammer blow really is worth anything. In the sense, it's not like without it, he would have been paid any less.
And if he leaves in the middle?
That's the same idea. And well, if he leaves in the middle, if he leaves after 50 prutas or whatever, I'll be okay. In principle, the guy's going to have to pay him for his time, 50 prutas so far. But then there's no question. It's nowhere near being finished yet. But
no.
Here we're talking about if he were to not do that last hammer blow that makes it into a functional getchka, the guy would still pay him the full 100 prutas. So therefore, you can't say that last hammer blow was considered worth anything, that therefore it should taint all the money and make it considered Avodah Zarah. So Rashi and Tosfos both refer to that this comes up in many other places in Halacha. For example, we had a case in Kiddushin, for example, where a man says to a woman that a woman says to a man, for example, that make me some jewelry and I will be niskadish to you for the fact that you made me the jewelry. So we said that doesn't work because, again, yeshna l'schirus mitchilav adsoi, every bit of work he does, he's owed another prutta. Eventually, the last tiny bit of work he does is worth less than a prutta, so you don't have a prutta for kiddushin. You have less than a prutta. Same idea. Okay.
Just on the work itself. Not on
just on the work itself.
What he makes.
Right.
Not on
the yeah, we're talking about the work, yeah.
Part of
that
prutta is
a
milver.
Right, because you can't be milver. The rest of it, the previous 99 is a milver, right. And then what you have left now is less than a prutta. Okay. Mishnah says, you're not allowed to make ornaments, jewelry, for an Avodah Zarah. Kaplois, or nezamim, or tabois, for example, necklaces, or earrings, or finger rings. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a b'schar mutter. Rabbi Eliezer says you would be allowed to do it for pay. The pay that you get for it would be mutter for the same reason we just said. Now, Tosfos points out, what is this doing in the Mishnah over here? How could Rabbi Eliezer possibly be saying that you're allowed to make jewelry for an Avodah Zarah as long as you're getting paid for it? It doesn't make sense. It can't even be because of Ava, because of bad relations with the Goyim, because as long as you can find an excuse, then it would be valid, and here you could find an excuse. So Tosfos says that we shouldn't be goyim these two lines in the Mishnah. And Tosfos mentioned the fact is we see Rashi didn't explain it. Otherwise, you would have at least expected Rashi to explain the word kaplois, which is a bit of an unusual word, implying that Rashi apparently didn't have it in his Girsa either. Some of the some Some of the Achronim defend it that maybe the point is again to say that the point is that we're same. Well, not only that, but also the idea would be the Tiferet Yisrael. Our Mishnayos says, for example, that there's a concept which we'll learn later on in the Gemara, later on in our Masechta. There's no such thing as designating something in advance for Avodah Zarah. There's no such thing as hektish for Avodah Zarah. You can't, unlike with the Beit Mikdash, Lahavdil. That you can say this is
donated to the Beit Hamikdash, and it immediately gains kedusha. You can't say I'm donating this to Avodah Zarah, and it immediately becomes an altar only when it's actually used for worship. So over here, you're making these necklaces. The guy is saying, "I want them
for Avodah Zarah," but they're not. They're not yet Avodah Zarah. Therefore, you could argue maybe that. Therefore, you could argue maybe that Rabbi Eliezer could be arguing therefore that you're allowed to do it for pay. Or that the pay itself would be kosher for the same. If you use it for Avodah Zarah, then it becomes also. The fact of the matter is not only again that many Rishonim say we're not gerda sit in the Gemara, but the poskim don't even bring this halacha at all because apparently they didn't have it in their Mishnayos either. Ein mochin lahem b'mechubal l'karka, another din, you're not allowed to sell a goy something attached to the ground for reasons that we'll talk about in the Gemara. Aval mochin hu mishi kopt it, but you can sell it to him after it was chopped down. So for example, a tree. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a mochel who I'm a nas lochus. Rabbi Yehuda says you're allowed to sell it to them on condition that they chop it down. Who the halacha is like in that? You have different poskim, different rishonim. Talk about some of them say the halacha is like a meir because he's a sam mishnah. The Rambam, and then most of the other rishonim, and this is how it's brought to Shulchan Aruch, paskin like Rabbi Yehuda because the halacha is usually like Rabbi Yehuda against a meir. So Gemara says menahani nivu. Where do we get this that we're saying that you're not allowed to sell them something attached to the ground? The Amakro loy techonim, because the pasuk says in connection with the seven nations of Canaan, and Tosfos points out that it doesn't only apply to them. We're applying it more broadly to the goyim. Loy techonim literally means don't favor them, but it means loy titulam chanoya bakarka. Don't give them the ability to rest to camp out in the land. So therefore, you're selling them. So many of the Rishonim say that it only applies in Eretz Yisrael. Some of them say it does apply. Some of them say it apply. It may apply in Port Florida as well. And we'll see also over the next couple of blocks, we'll see in the next mission also, we'll have more details about it. Anyway, so don't give them the ability to camp and land, in other words, to settle there. If they own something that's attached to the ground, then that already gives them a certain permanence to their settlement. So the question is, don't you need the word for its simple meaning? Don't be favorable to them, don't make peace treaties with them or whatever. The answer is, but if that's the case, if that's what the Pasuk meant, the expression would have been loitachonim, or the choylam, which would be the Lashon Chet. My loitachonim, shema mina pauti. The word loitachonim, we can understand both things. Don't give them chayin, but also don't give them chanoya. One more. Because otherwise, it would have said loitachonim. Okay, v'akati mi boi le'dehochi am rachmona le'titin lahem matnas shochinam. Don't we need it for yet another meaning? That it means don't give them a free gift that doesn't have a purpose or whatever. Chinam. The answer is in kein le'makor le'techinem. If that's what it meant, then it would have used the word le'techinem. My le'techonem sh'mam in akulu. The fact that it says le'techonem means all three of them. One second. Tani nami hochi, we learn also in a braisa. It means all three. Le'techonem le'titin lahem chanoya v'karka. Javar achal le'techonem le'titin lahem chen. Javar achal le'techonem le'titin lahem matnas chinam. So all three things. You're not allowed to give them permanence in the land. You're not allowed to favor them, like making a peace treaty with them. And you're not allowed to give them a free gift. And more details of that we'll learn tomorrow, guys.